Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Draft Talk podcast, brought to you by 99 Yards. The Draft Talk podcast is exclusively about the NFL draft. Each week, we'll bring you analysis, interviews, reports, mock drafts, and much, much more. I'm your host, Brian, and I'm joined by our draft team today, Owain, Stu, MJ. How are we doing, guys?
Yeah, all good. Thanks, Brian. Really excited to talk about a couple of my guys on today's podcast, a couple of my favourite players in the draft probably coming up here. So, yeah, really looking forward to what we've got lined up on today's pod.
Yeah, I'm very good. After a bit of IT hitches, we're ready to go and talk wide receivers and running backs.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Looking forward to getting started on these position groups and see where we've got agreements and any disagreements.
Fantastic. Yeah, as the guy said there, we're going to look into running backs and wide receivers shortly. But firstly, we're going to talk about MJ. Wrote a really good article this week, of course, on 99yards.com. Do check it out. Looking at the positions and which are popular with first round draft picks. So MJ, looking into that, what did you find and how do you think it'll be in this year's draft?
Thanks, Brian. So this was really prompted by last year's draft for me and when the Giants drafted Xavier McKinney last year at the top of the second round. I think he was pick 36. And he'd consistently been mocked in the teens and the early 20s. But he actually fell all the way into the second round to the Giants at 36, which was great value. I know he got injured, didn't play the start of the season, but the last six games he played really well, showed his potential. I think in future he's going to be knocking on the door of Pro Bowls at safety. And I just wondered, you know, if he'd have been a cornerback, would he have gone in the first round? Was it purely because he was a safety and that was a position that perhaps wasn't as valued as a first round pick? And I know we've talked already about other positions and probably going to talk about them today, you know, running backs. And I wanted to have a look and see what sort of things were happening over the last sort of five drafts. And to an extent, there is a little bit of ebb and flow. You know, if there's a particularly good draft class at a certain position, then yes, they do get drafted in the first round. But when you sort of average it out, there are position groups that are favoured. And I think a lot of it has kind of now centred from the quarterback. And that's perhaps not unexpected because the NFL is far more of a pass first game. And so what you tend to find is you're looking at quarterback. You're looking at who's protecting them. You're looking at offensive tackle. You're looking at who they're throwing to. You're looking at the wide receivers. And then you're looking at, on the defensive side, who's going to get after them, the edge rushers, and also the cornerbacks, who's going to stop this passing game advancing down the field. So on average, all of those sorts of positions, you're looking at about four players per draft. So if you take quarterbacks, for example, four quarterbacks in the first round, I think we'd probably say we're definitely going to get four quarterbacks in the first round, four wide receivers. As you go through, you can start to see a pattern where actually you could probably construct a draft now that wouldn't be far off those sorts of numbers. And then the positions that are not so favoured, tight end, only tend to get one of those in the first round. I think we'd probably agree there's one of those in the first round again this year. Guard and centre, those interior offensive linemen, probably only one or two. It's not like tackle. Tackle, you tend to be up around four. On the interior, a couple less. And again, safety, fewer than cornerbacks. Again, one or two. And the same is true for running backs. Again, one or two. And I think in all of those positions, that's probably the sorts of numbers that we're looking at again this year. So I don't know what you guys think of those sorts of numbers.
Yeah. I think it comes down to team building as well, right? So the positions that we're seeing taken a lot in the first round are the positions where people are also spending a lot of money when it comes to the larger contracts. And safety is a position over the last couple of drafts that has been completely devalued. And it's been a couple of drafts now, isn't it, since we've seen a safety taken in the first round. And you could say the same about running back. There seems to be a growing committee of people not wanting to either spend money on running backs or don't take them in the first round. So, yeah, it's really interesting. And I agree that kind of the positions we're going to see the most of, you look at the quarterback, receiver, the offensive tackles are definitely going to be up there as the most taken.
Yeah, and you find that the positions, the ones that are picked most frequently in the first round overall are the players who earn the biggest money as well. You'll look, the highest paid players are quarterbacks, then followed by edge rushers, tackles, wide receivers, corners. That's the top five positions generally by who get the big second contracts. So you tend to find that, that grouping as well tends to be where teams look in the first rounds because they want to get that top guy at that position as early as possible where they can fill out the other positions later on, running back, safety, into your offensive lineman. You can often get really good players day two as well. So, yeah, it probably will fall into that pattern somewhat. There is often an odd player that sneaks in. You know, a couple of years ago, we had two tight ends in the first round with Noah Fant and TJ Hawkinson, but that's a bit of an outlier. You know, there might be that if you have a really two top players at a position who are vying for that, but generally it does tend to follow the pattern that MJ found as he was constructing that article.
Yeah, I think Stuart's spot on there. Follow the money. The guys that are getting drafted a lot, you know, you can save a lot with a rookie contract. Doesn't always work out, but it makes sense that you try and get them edge rushers, them tackles, them quarterbacks, as it can save you quite a bit getting one in the draft rather than trying to get one in free agency, as we're going to find out this year. Don't forget to check that article out by MJ on 99yards.com. It'll be interesting to see which positions are popular first-round picks this year. Talking of position groups, let's get cracking and looking at our top fives. Up first, we've got running backs. Owain, you're up first. Who's your top five this year?
Okay, yeah, so let's get started with running back. So I'll go from one through to five. So my top running back is Travis Etienne. Number two, we've got Najee Harris. Number three, Javonte Williams. Number four, Kenny Gainwell. And five, Khalil Herbert.
Good stuff. How about you, Stu? Who you've got?
I have four of the five same players, but in a slightly different order from Owain, and this was probably up for debate about order. So I've got number one, Najee Harris. Number two, Javonte Williams. Number three, Travis Etienne. Number four, Kenneth Gainwell. And I really struggled on number five, but I've plucked for probably not on the basis of this year, but the year previously, Chuba Hubbard.
Good stuff. And last but no means least, MJ, who have you got?
Okay, so number one, I've got Najee Harris. Number two, Travis Etienne. Number three, Javonte Williams. Number four, Kenny Gainwell. And number five, I've got Michael Carter.
Good stuff, like it. Well, let's start at the top. MJ, Stu, you've both gone for Alabama's Najee Harris. Why is he your number one?
It's a difficult one because I think the top few are very close. There's a lot of good points to any of them. And I think it depends, again, on scheme and team of who is picking. They will have the different flavors of what they want in a running back. I think particularly last year, Najee Harris was incredibly consistent. He's a bigger guy compared to some of the guys in the draft. He can run between the tackles. He's consistent. He's not bad at all with the ball in his hands. From a receiving point of view, he's probably not the best receiving back that you'll see in the draft, but I think he offers you that option. As a chain mover, I think he's really good, and he will fulfill that role very well for some team. He's also quite a good finisher when he gets near the goal line. He's got that strength to knock people out of the way, get to the end zone, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, I agree on this one. So I like the big banger running back here. It's probably a reaction to something sort of relating to the Giants, where I've always thought I'd love Saquon Barkley, but I'd love a complementary back that's a more physical back. He's got those sorts of comparisons with Derrick Henry. He is perfectly serviceable as a pass catcher. It's not his main role, but he can do that. He's got good long speed. And I just love the thought of whoever picks him. And I think he will go in the first round. You can hand the ball off to him 20 times a game. You can control the clock. And I think he's the top running back.
Good stuff. Owain, you went a little bit different. You had Travis Etienne as your number one. What is it you like about the guy from Clemson?
Yeah, so it seems that the league potentially is or has Najee Harris as their number one. And I think the top three is probably clear cut at this point. It just depends, as we were saying, on order you want and what flavor you like. For me, when I'm grading running backs, I do value the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield really highly. I think it's probably vital for a modern day bell cow three down running back to be able to do so. So yeah, when I'm grading running backs, I do value physicality, toughness, footwork, field vision, which both Najee Harris and Travis Etienne have. But I do think that Travis Etienne is a better pass catcher, and that is the only reason why I have him currently above Harris.
Yeah, no, I can see why you went for Etienne. He's a popular choice as well as a potential first rounder, and giving, you know, particularly there's a lot of rookie quarterbacks or new quarterbacks in the league who've maybe 1, 2, 3 years experience who are doing really well. And the fact that he gives them a pass catching option, he does give them that bit of to give it the quote, a safety valve. If he's looking in trouble, Etienne's probably one of the better options at that because he is good in the receiving game, and he will fit in well with any team, and he will probably be the number one back for whichever team that he ends up at.
Yeah, I think he's got the potential to be a more explosive player. I think he could have big play potential. Whereas Harris is more in that Derrick Henry sort of mold, Travis Etienne is more towards your Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook sort of mold. And I think he'll be a nightmare matchup in the pass game. And, you know, here's where I think we could end up with two in the first round, and they could be quite close together, depending on the needs of the teams in those sort of 20 to 32 sort of positions.
Next up, Javonte Williams. Owen, MJ, you both had him at 3. Stu, he's your number 2 running back. What is it you like about him?
When I was watching the tapes and highlights on these running backs, he was the one that excited me the most watching him. I thought he was a really exciting player to watch. He is a kind of guy, I think, is a bit of a jack of all trades. I think he can do a bit of everything. I don't think he's the most spectacularly fast. He's not the best pass catcher. He's not the strongest between the tackles, but he's good at them all. He came across as a really tough player. He's very difficult to bring down, and you see him in a lot of tape. He's just smacking people out of the way when he's heading for the end zone. I think he's a really competitive player, and I think you can have him on the field in all three downs, regardless of what kind of play that you're designing for him. So I think he'd be a really, really useful attribute to any team that decides that they need a running back. I probably don't think he will go above Etienne or Harris. I think he will be the third one off the board, but he's the one that I really liked what I saw from him, and I think he'd be a great value as a second round pick for somebody.
Yeah, I completely get that. I think he broke the most tackles of any running back in the 2020 season. You know, he's explosive, he's elusive in space, and he just seems to glide through defenders like he's a downhill skier. So yeah, absolutely fantastic athlete, and he's one that has really benefited from playing in 2020. And yeah, he's going to be a kind of a bell cow back for whoever is lucky enough to pick him.
Yeah, I wonder here whether we're going to draw comparisons with somebody I think we might talk about a little bit later in the receivers, and Rashad Bateman, where I think after you get past those initial really high selections, this is the next guy, next cab off the rank, it probably in the second round. And I'd echo all the comments there. Good all-round skills. He increased his production year on year, definitely in every down threat. I think he's a really good blocker, which is an extra, you know, tick in the box for most teams. Very good in short yardage situations. The only slight mark, I think, where there was one or two issues around a bit of ball security there, but there's no doubt that I think he is far and above. He's number 3 in this draft at running back.
Well, on to number 4. Finally, we have some consensus. Everyone has Kenny Gainwell as their 4th ranked back. I mean, other than having a great name for a running back, MJ, what do you like about Gainwell?
I think you can just put him anywhere. I mean, we've got him in the running back position, but he can play receiver. He can play legitimate slot receiver. He played a bit of quarterback at high school as well. So there are all sorts of plays that you could design for Kenny Gainwell. Very dynamic. He runs some really good routes. He perhaps needs a little bit more patience and a bit of vision when he's running through his lanes, but I just think that he could be another every down back and a threat wherever you put him on the field.
Yeah, I think that Gainwell, if you have a creative play caller, he will do great things for an offense and used in certain situations. And as you said, he could line up in various positions, and that versatility is really, really important for a good offense, because it brings that element of unpredictability to teams. So it's very hard to scheme defensively against unpredictable and creative teams. So he gives any team who's got a bit of in mind what they want to use him to do. I think he'd be a good pickup for someone like that.
Yeah, so for me, if there's one player in the 2021 NFL draft that I'm rooting for, it's Kenny Gainwell. He's absolutely my guy. It doesn't matter what team he signs for, I'll be getting his shirt come April. I think Gainwell's probably a lot closer to the top three than going backwards to five, and he's probably been slept on quite a bit. So anyone who's been paying attention to any of my my draft coverage knows that Kenny Gainwell is my favourite player in the draft. I love him. I love what he does. If you don't know a lot about him, go away and Google him, because you know he's a good human being. You know, he's not just a great player; he's a great person. If anyone who doesn't know, he had four family members die from coronavirus. So he took the decision to opt out to look after his family and go back home. Saying that, opting out has hurt his draft stock in terms of he was probably ahead of, or he was ahead of Javonte Williams in the summer. So Williams has jumped ahead of him. And if he had played, I think he probably would have had a great season, stayed at the number 2-3 slot, because that's where I had him in the summer. But I think NFL teams will value his character as well as his play style. I think he's going to be able to do a lot of things, and anyone that that wants, you know, explosive backs, then, you know, he is absolutely that. And he does everything that you'd want him to do. His speed is ridiculous. He maintains it through tight spaces. He's slippery, hard to break down. And for me, I think his stats say it all. I think it'll be quality for whichever team's lucky enough to draft in. And if I'm drafting a running back, I want him to be a creative playmaker and as a pass catcher. And he's also a physical runner. So Kingwell is exactly what I'd be looking for in a running back in this draft.
Very good. Certainly one to keep an eye out on. Now, with three different number five running backs here, let's go back to you, Owen. You've got Khalil Herbert from Virginia Tech. What is it you like about him?
Yeah, so I think we're probably all in the same position here, where this is extremely difficult to call who is going to fill this spot. It could flick between a number of different people. You know, it is a contentious spot for me and for a lot of people. I've flipped between Patterson, Stevenson, Hubbard, Carter, but ultimately I have settled on Khalil Herbert from Virginia Tech. I've edged that way for a while, but what sealed it was his performance at the Senior Bowl, especially in pass protection drills. He wasn't expected to be successful there at all, and he was an absolute beast. He completely bossed it. So the Senior Bowl really allowed him to answer some of the questions that he needed to answer going into the draft, or say especially around his blocking. And he did everything he could to be in the discussion. So yeah, I like what he does. He doesn't have particularly many miles on the clock either. So yeah, he just edges it for me.
And on to you, Stu, your number five is Chuba Hubbard. Firstly, what a great name. But what else is there to like about Hubbard?
This was a really difficult one to pick five. You could go anyone from five down to 8, 9, 10 as your five. And it's really difficult to know who is going to be that fifth running back. I think that Chuba Hubbard is probably one of those players who did not benefit from going back to college. He had a really good 2019 season, and I think he would have been drafted higher than he will be this year. And because of that, he didn't quite live up to the billing. He was in the talk along with Travis Etienne and Najee Harris going into the season. So I think that the draft teams will remember that 2019 season and think that he could be a good, valuable pickup later on if they're able to get him in the right spot. I think his vision is one of the things that stands out. He's really good at spotting a lane to go into, and he's quick. And once he gets up ahead of steam, he's one of these players who seems to take a few strides to get quickness, but if he can get into the open field, he's got home run ability. So I think that he will do well wherever he ends up.
Yeah, I think 2019 was a great season for him. I think he was a Heisman finalist in 2019 off the back of that production. And absolutely, he can go the distance. If he finds that lane, he is gone. And I think that he's also got return specialist kind of capabilities, which actually quite a few of these have in doing a bit of research on them. There's quite a lot of potential return specialists here. But he could be up there. He could have been one of the three or four that I chose at five as well.
Well, onto your choice at five, MJ, you've got North Carolina's Michael Carter. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, so back to North Carolina. So he was part of the double team with Javonte Williams there. I think in part this might be, I'm being a little bit swayed by his Senior Bowl performance, because he had a good week there. And I think that's probably helped. Maybe that's put him at the forefront of my mind here. He was a good complementary back at North Carolina. He was a contributor over 4 years. So you've got a good level of tape there to have a look at. Again, this might be where I'm playing middle of the fairway, and I've got a lot of tape to look at. He's got good vision. He's got good receiving skills. He's slippery. I think the comparison that I saw somewhere was sort of Nyheim Hines sort of figure at the Colts. And that's possibly where the sort of role that I could see him playing, similar to that.
Well, there we go. Eight great running back prospects for us all to keep an eye out for. Let's shift out to the wide receivers. Hell of a receiver class last year. And it's looking pretty good this year too. Stu, start us off. Who's in your top five this year?
I think there will be a lot of similarities in who people pick for wide receivers, certainly through the first few picks. So my top five is, number one, I've got Ja'Marr Chase. At number two, I've got Jaylen Waddle. At number three, I've got maybe a bit of a surprise in Rashad Bateman. Number four, Devontae Smith. And number five, Terrence Marshall.
I like it. Good stuff. Owen, who have you got on yours?
Yeah, so I have Ja'Marr Chase as my number one receiver. Number two, I've got Jaylen Waddle. Number three, Rashad Bateman. Number four, Devontae Smith. And number five, I've got Rondale Moore.
And finally, I've left you to your last again. Sorry, MJ, who's in your top five?
That's fine. I was just thinking I was so close to doing the same thing as you two. So number one, Ja'Marr Chase. Number two, Jaylen Waddle. Number three, by a hair's breadth, I've stuck with Devonta Smith. Number four, Rashad Bateman. And number five, Kadarius Toney.
Fantastic. There we go. A few more agreements on the receivers than the running backs. But let's dive into these receivers. Starting with everybody's number one pick, LSU's Ja'Marr Chase. Owen, what is it you like about Chase?
Yeah, so he just does it all, doesn't it? There's not one thing that you can pin down and go, he's good at that. He is good at everything. He excels at everything. I think he would have been the top receiver taken in last year's class. He's that good. What I would say is comparing the top, most people see it as a clear-cut top three, don't they? And obviously we've disagreed a bit. But Chase is at the top of that class completely. He just makes the position look easy. He plays big. He plays bigger than you think. I think the LSU are listing him at 6 foot one. That there was a couple of rumors, I don't know how true they are, that he could potentially come in under 6 foot. But I don't see that being able to hurt his draft stock. He's a top 10 player in this class.
Yeah, I had written in my notes about here, plays big. I think he plays a lot bigger than you when you watch him on tape. You think that this guy is a 6'2", 6'3", receiver easily. He bullies some of the cornerbacks that you think should be dominating him size-wise. I think he's got a really good work ethic. He works very, very hard. He can play outside, which is a lot of some of the new receivers coming in, they tend to want to play a bit more inside. He can be a true outside receiver. He's good at the catch point, 50-50s. He's good, which I think you'll see a lot more of in the NFL than he maybe did at the college level. He's good off the press. He can create very quickly away from the line of scrimmage. He's athletic. He's not the most fluid athlete you'll ever see, but he's very athletic. And I think when I was evaluating these players, I don't even think it was close on who number one was. Jamar Chase was number one by quite a distance, I felt. And as I say, he could have been the number one receiver last year and easily above, I think it was Henry Ruggs that went first, and he's definitely a player who's above, in my opinion, above what Henry Ruggs was when he went the first receiver off the board last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just looked at my notes, and the last thing I wrote down was I think of him as the Trevor Lawrence of the receivers. He is far in excess of the other receivers. Stats absolutely on fire 2019, which means the only thing you've got is you don't have any 2020 tape to go on, but I don't think that's going to hinder him at all. He's got it all. His stats, his height, weight stats put him roughly in the kind of DeAndre Hopkins, Davante Adams sort of bracket, but I think he's more physical than them. And I think that he has it all to be an elite wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I'm nowhere near as experienced or as good as you guys are watching tape and grading prospects and everything, but oh, wow, just watching a bit of him, he's phenomenal. I think whoever picked him will be very happy for a number of years to come. Next up, as everybody's number two, we are Jalen Waddle. Stu, what is it you like about the Alabama receiver?
I think the one word is speed. Jalen Waddle is explosive. He's an incredibly quick guy. He can separate from his corners very quickly just by pure speed at times. But that's not to decry his route running. He's a very good route runner as well. He can play outside. He can play in the slot. So he's versatile. You can move him around. And he can even play out of the backfield sometimes as well, because he's good with the ball in his hands. His run after catch ability shows through as well. So he offers another option to a quarterback if there's nothing downfield. He's got that short game as well. I think that he would have probably finished the season as the Heisman winner if he continued the whole season. He obviously had that leg break. I think that he was on course for as good a season, if not better, than Devontae Smith was. And he also, the thing that I saw a lot of as well, he plays on special teams. He's been a kickoff returner. He's been a punt returner as well. And that, to me, speaks volumes of what the Alabama team thought about his speed, but also his vision with the ball in his hands. As I've spoken about him earlier on before as well, Henry Ruggs was absolutely electrically fast, but he didn't play a lot of special teams. And I think that was one of the reasons why is Jalen Waddle's with the ball in his hands is a really good prospect as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Waddle is ridiculous. Watching his tape, his highlight reel is just fantastic. And you look at his average yards per catch and it's over 20. The four games he did manage in 2020 where he was playing with Smith, although he caught fewer passes, he had far more yardage. He is electric and you're not catching him. He's got Henry Ruggs' speed, but he's got kind of Jerry Jeudy's route running ability. And again, I was looking with wide receivers. I've been looking at the stats, looking at the height, weight stats, and he is almost bang on Tyreek Hill stats. And again, I think for the lucky team that selects him, you're going to get an absolutely electric option on your offense.
Yeah, so this is where I disagree slightly what you both have said about Jamar Chase. I think that Jalen Waddle is a lot closer to being number one in this class than being number three. And I think there isn't a lot between Chase and Waddle. And that's simply from what I've watched on tape. I think what he offers is exactly what NFL teams are now looking for. Hughes just mentioned that before his season-ending ankle injury, his stats were ahead of Devontae Smith's, who obviously benefited from the workload that Waddle vacated with his injury. And you look at the tape when Waddle and Smith are on the pitch, who stands out? For me, it's Waddle. Who gets the ball more? It's Waddle. And I've got absolutely no issue with someone putting Waddle ahead of Chase in this class, because I do think it's very close between them. It's just a matter, again, of picking your flavour and what does your offence need? Does it need someone? Well, not that Chase can't go and be quick, but I see him as more of succeeding in contested catches as as well as the speed, whereas Waddle has game-breaking explosivity and game-breaking speed that can absolutely blow a game wide open.
Wow, certainly one to keep an eye out for. Up next, Owen and Stu both had Rashad Bateman at number three. I know you're a huge fan, Owen. Your eyes lit up when Stu mentioned him earlier. So just what is it you like so much about Bateman?
Yeah, I was just surprised when I was writing them out. I thought I'd be the only one that did this. So Stu beat me to it there. but yeah, again, what I said about Kenny Gainwell, about being my guy, Bateman is as well. When I've watched him over the summer and I had him up there with Waddle and with Chase as being that good. Now, he has 2020 has hindered him a bit just because of the play, opting in, opting out, and it kind of, he was just stuck in limbo for a lot of the time. But I think he just has a lot to work with. You know, he has the toughness, he has the physicality. He's just got lost in the amount of good receivers and the receiver talk of this class. And as I said, opting out isn't gonna hinder his quality. He's still a quality player whether he opted out or not. And I could see him having a similar year to Justin Jefferson this year, where he could land on a team and be really successful.
Yeah, as I was saying that Bateman was my third off the board, I could see Owen's just absolute delight at that. So I'm glad that I've made him happy with that pick as well. But so we obviously had a top two, and it came down to Bateman versus Devontae Smith for me. And as I was watching the tape, I just became more and more impressed. I'd heard good things about Bateman and a lot of talk about him, how good he was. And when actually watching him, I was more and more like, I need to watch more of this guy. I want to watch more of this guy. I want to watch more of this guy. He's maybe a bit bigger than the other guys, but he's quick. He's more than quick enough to play the position very effectively in the NFL. I think he looks just very smooth when he's moving around the field. He's just got a nice fluid action about him. He's good at the catch point. He's strong. He can work the outside very well as well. I think whoever gets him, he could, in a couple of years, become the centerpiece of an offense, I think. If you get him in the right situation with the right coach, he could be the top receiver that comes out of this class.
Yeah, as I said, I think it was a hair's breadth for me in the end, and that's come from watching a bit of tape this week and starting off on Monday with Smith far ahead of Bateman and them really closing the gap as I watched it. I think I'd agree with everything there. I think he's a really good prospect in an all-round capacity. He's got, you know, good hands. He's good in traffic. He's a good route runner. Doesn't necessarily have the same top speed, but he's by no means slow. And I think I promise I won't keep using golf analogies, but it's a little bit of, you know, Bateman might be that one where you just drop it down, you pull the three wood out because you're going to hit the middle of the fairway rather than going for it all. And you're absolutely right. I think Bateman at the end of the season, his stats might end up better than Devontae Smith's.
Oh, no, if all the golf comparisons are that good, you can keep on. I enjoyed that. But talking about Devontae Smith, who you had number three, why are you putting there, MJ? What is it that we need to know about him?
Okay, so we're talking about the Heisman Trophy winner, so there's got to be something good going on here. As you say, it may well be partly because Waddle was out after four games. But he is talented. He's a very good route runner. He creates separation. He is quick. He is slippery. And as soon as he's in the open field, he is gone. I think there are two conditions I would probably add to this. One is he needs the right scheme. He needs the right offense. And I'd love it if between being drafted and opening weekend, he put on about 10 to 15 pounds. Because I had a quick look through the stats for 2020 season. And if you look at receivers who either went over 1,000 yards or got 10 touchdowns, there were only three that were kind of below 6 foot and 190 pounds. So you're talking Tyreek Hill, Brandon Cooks and Tyler Lockett, and those were the only ones. Every other receiver who got those sorts of stats was over 6 foot, over 190 pounds. So at the moment, I think we're thinking he's about 6'1 and 175. So there are a few things he's not going to do. He's not going to block for you particularly well, but you don't really want him in the team for that. And he evades, he doesn't break tackles. I think in his highlight reel, I didn't see a single run where he broke a tackle. He just evades them. And I think that's where the scheme part of it comes in. If they can scheme it up, so he's just got open field to run into, then he'll be really successful. If he's running into traffic at 175, after 6 weeks of being hit time and again by NFL cornerbacks and linebackers, he might have a problem.
Yeah, for me, having Smith at four, it isn't because I don't like the player. It's just that it's just how I rank the prospects. So, you know, when we're trying to grade them, trying to project what their careers are going to be like in the NFL. And I saw what Bateman does as being more transferable over to the NFL. If we were grading college careers, then Chase would obviously probably be the number one in this class, wouldn't he, over Chase, because he's a Heisman Trophy winner and a multiple national championship winner. But it's important to remember that opt-outs are affecting the whole process. So whether that's Chase or Bateman, Devontae Smith's gone above them because he's played. Of course, the tape was really good, but him just simply playing has maybe put him in the forefront of some people's minds. You know, it's difficult to compare what Devontae Smith has done in 2020 to what Jamar Chase or Bateman did in 2019. And you know, scouting players this year is fluid. My top five isn't that different to how it was in the summer, really, when I initially scouted these players. And it's almost impossible to compare, say, what Chase and Smith have done to each other, using accurate metrics, and because there's just absolutely no way of predicting what Chase or what Bateman would have done in 2020. We're working on preferences, we're working on our own instincts, and we're working on feelings solely from the game tape that we've got available. So it's difficult to accurately predict any draft class, but of course it's even more difficult to predict it in this draft cycle. So yeah, we may be reaching a bit in some cases, but you know, opinions aren't going to follow the natural pattern that they normally do. Where I think the easy thing to do in some cases, and I think mock drafts say that, is to have Smith ahead because of what he's done in 2020. But I look at the 2019 film and tape, and I think what Bateman does is more transferable than what Smith did in 2020, even though it was obviously brilliant in its own right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, having ranked Devontae Smith as the fourth receiver, it's not a slight. He's still going in the first round, and he's probably going in the top 20. Absolutely. Of the first round. So, I mean, he's still a phenomenally good player. I think that he didn't stand out too much. And that's not a technical term. It's not a fancy term. He just didn't sparkle the same when I was watching as some of these other receivers, and I can't really put my finger on why, because everything he did looked good. He did well. He scored lots of touchdowns, lots of yards. He was beating players with ease from speed at times. He's got a really long stride once he gets going, but it just didn't shine the same as the other guys, and that is sometimes what you go with. It's what to the eye looks better than you can put a page of stats in front of you. But when you look at somebody, that does give you sometimes some bias into just how they look playing the game.
Yeah, right. And that's what some teams are going to have to do this year in drafting prospects as well. So, you know, they're going to be looking at who sparkles. And, you know, Devontae Smith did sparkle in 2020, but when you're comparing the tape, did he sparkle enough over his whole career? You know, we're not saying he's a one-season prospect, one-season wonder, sorry, at all. But my gut just tells me that Bateman will project better as an NFL starter.
Well, there we go. That's everybody's one through four. And, well, the same as with the running backs. Everybody's got a different fifth choice, which is good to see. Plenty more players to talk about. Stu, let's start with you. You have Terrence Mitchell as your fifth best receiver. What is it you liked about the big guy from LSU?
I think you said it there, the big guy. He offers something a bit different. A lot of receivers that we're seeing, particularly taken early, are really good route runners. You've seen it in the last couple of years, really explosive with the ball in their hands. And that is what a lot of teams are wanting. But he offers something just that little bit different. I think he maybe gets lost a little bit in the fact that he was playing with Jamar Chase and he was playing with Justin Jefferson. And a lot of eyes were drawn towards them and what they do really well. But I think he's one of these guys that he's not going to outburn anybody. He's not going to be electric with the ball in his hands. But if you put the ball up there, he's going to contest it. He's going to be a threat in the red zone as well, which at the end of the day is what you want. You want in touchdowns. If you get down into the red zone, if you've got a mismatch, he's the type of guy that you're going to look for. And I think that's he might not necessarily be the fifth best receiver in the draft, but he's going to be one that I think that teams are maybe going to look at a little bit more highly for the skill set that he does offer. If you've got a player who is already quick with the ball in his hands, do you want another one? Do you want somebody who's evasive, or do you want someone who's going to offer you something different? And I think he offers that difference that teams might value.
No, I agree. I think he does what Jamar Chase does, just not as well, if that makes sense. So, I think he's learned a lot of his game upon what Jamar Chase has done, combining his size, his speed, and his physicality. I think he is able to overpower opponents. And what stands out for me with Marshall is his ball skills and his acceptable at the catch point. So I think he, without being disrespectful to him, he could be a poor man's Jamar Chase.
I think, yeah, when you're looking at who could draft him, I think if you find a team that struggled in the red zone, I think you could draft him and all of a sudden, as you said, Stu, you've got a red zone weapon. You've got somebody who's going up for contested catches, 50-50 balls. I think he's a really nice prospect. As you say, he's probably flown a little bit under the radar because of the class that he's in. But I think he'll be a really good pickup. And I think he'll probably be gone early day two.
I know we're not talking about where we think these players are going to end up at, but the team that I envisioned them playing really well with, and particularly if Corey Davis walks out the door, is Tennessee. I think that lining him up opposite AJ Brown would be a really good move for that team, particularly off the play action with Tannehill likes to play, but I know we're not talking about that, but I could see him fitting in a team, something like that. He would fit with there. There's other teams he would fit with as well, but that was when I was looking at him, I said, that's the kind of team that he would look good on.
That's a really good one with your GM hat on, isn't it? Because you've made a saving there. You're not paying Corey Davis another contract, and you're bringing somebody in on a rookie contract to do a similar sort of job.
Yeah, great shot there, MJ. Always looking at the money. I like it. We'll make a GM out of you. Very good. Moving on from the big guys a little bit. Oh, and you've got 5'9" Rondale Moore as your number five receiver. Gives hope to all those vertically challenged guys out there. What is it you like about Moore?
Yeah, so this number five spot is, again, similar to the running backs, extremely difficult, isn't it? And for me, it was between Kadarius Toney and Rondale Moore. I think they're fairly similar players and have a fairly similar play style. Okay, Toney might have a larger frame and be a bit larger, but I guess it depends where you put the value, right? So when I grade great players, the ceiling is really important. So we're grading how good players could be. So I've opted for Rondale Moore at five ahead of Toney just for that reason. He does what Toney did in 2020 before it was cool. He was doing it in 2019 to a very successful level. In the summer, you could have argued that he was potentially a top three receiver talent. I mean, you look at the 2019 tape and it's great. He's electric with the ball in his hands. He's really good in the slot. And he is going to be able to win you games. Because of the size, you are going to hear continuous comparisons to Tyreek Hill, which I'm not going to do, but he has the same kind of tendency to affect the offense because of his speed and how good he is after the catch with the ball in his hands. He can move like a running back. So I think you can use him in multiple different ways, especially on jet sweeps and, say, over the middle of the field. I think he could be an exceptional talent. I think Toney is able to do that as well, don't get me wrong. But I do think that Rondale Moore's ceiling is potentially slightly higher than what Toney's is. That's the only reason why I choose him ahead.
Yeah, I had Rondell Moore as my 5.5. I think he nearly made my top five. And I think a lot of what Owen said as well was the ability to use him in different ways. You saw a lot of him in jet sweeps, a lot of bubble screens, a lot of in the middle of the field. He seemed to excel in that. For a guy his size, he was getting hammered in the middle of the field, and he's rock solid with the ball in his hands in that position. He's got quite a low centre of gravity. And one of the tapes are saying he can squat 600 pounds, allegedly, for a guy his size. You know, that's what they're saying, one of the teams. So he's incredibly strong. So there's a lot to like about him. And the thing that's kind of stood out as well is, as a defence, you've always got to account for him. He might be in a position that you think he's not really going to affect this play, and all of a sudden he moves, he's in motion, and boom, he's gone. So you've really got to be switched on when he's on the field, and I think he could be a mismatch nightmare for some defences.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think it was a coin flip for me, and I'd got Kadarius Toney and I'd got Rondell Moore because of the very similar sort of player. And I think in the end, it just went down to how much did I have to go on? And obviously Moore's had injury concerns, not so much tape over the last 2 years and a bit of a question mark over the durability. But I think the versatility that you've got there, the breaking tackles, both for Moore and for Toney, and use on plays like jet sweeps. A lot of the tape that I watched, there was quite a few jet sweeps in there. And I think that if somebody like Deebo Samuel hadn't been injured last year and had another good year with the 49ers, we might be talking about Toney and Rondell Moore a little bit higher than we are.
Well, I was going to say finally, but we've touched upon him there. Your fifth pick was Kadarius Toney, MJ. Anything to add?
No, I think it was really interesting that it's a similar sort of player that Owen and I have gone for there. That's sort of, I wanted to pick somebody. I think teams are going to look for that electricity, that sort of juice in their receivers and versatility. And that's why I went for Toney. And that's why equally I could have gone for Rondell Moore.
Yeah, we keep saying it, don't we? But I think it's going to come down to team fit. I do think that Toney probably does get drafted ahead of Rondell Moore. It's just that that's just how the rankings fall, I guess. Tony's an absolute ankle breaker, isn't he? He's just erupted in 2020. And I do think he will go in the first round, maybe in the back end, but I do think he will get drafted ahead of Rondell Moore, even if I rank more highly.
Yeah, and I wonder if there will be some recency bias as well, and the fact that Florida had a really successful season last year as well. There's been a lot of eyes on them this year. They did really well. And I think a lot of people have been watching Kyle Pitts and watching the Florida. We quite like the idea of this guy, Toney. He's good as well. So I wonder if that might be the deciding factor for some teams, that they've just seen a lot more of him.
Well, there we go. We've got eight running backs, eight receivers to watch for in this year's draft. Bring it on. Very exciting. And that's all we've got time for today. We'll be running through more positions, more prospects in the next few weeks. So keep an eye out for our podcast. And I hope you enjoyed the Draft Talk podcast. Be sure to check out the Twitter, 99 Yards, for plenty more draft content. And of course, leave us any feedback you may have. Thanks for listening.